So the rules of Parliament, they provide that if the chairperson, if the committee is absent or unable to perform his duties, the members of the committee must elect one of his members as the acting chairperson of the session. So I would like to ask members right now to show I will call upon members to elect the acting chairperson for this session. I would like to see members raising their hands to nominate the acting chair, Honorable Lexia.
Are we electing temporary or permanent? I'm joking. I would like to nominate Honorable Mkhatshwa to be the chair of this sitting.
Thank you, Honorable Lexia. Can I get a second? Honorable Pasha?
Second, Honorable Mkhatshwa.
Okay, thank you very much. Honorable Mkhatshwa, you can come and take the seat.
Thank you very much, Anele. I don't know. Maybe I was about to say thank you very much, Chair. Welcome to all members of the Portfolio Committee. Welcome to the representatives from the department, led by the acting DDG, Dr. Mahlobo. I think the representatives from the department will be familiar with members. So perhaps just before we begin our deliberations, you could introduce yourself. But maybe I should just highlight the fact that as this portfolio committee, we have reiterated the importance of making each and every program of the PSET sector, or the PSET system, as important as the other. We've spoken about how we need to bring about some sort of equality between the universities and the TVET colleges, but we've also spoken about the importance of us truly understanding the role that we want CETs to play in our country. There's a lot that is overlapping between CETs and TVETs and CETs and basic education, and I think the transition to move CET colleges to higher education was a great one, but I think there might be a shared sentiment to say that we are still struggling to fully conceptualize, to fully implement what the role that CETs are meant to play in society. And hopefully through the briefing that we will receive today, as members we will try, as members and all of us present at the table today, we'll try and continue or lead conversations around how we can make this particular program of the department more effective in the role that it's supposed to play in society. So having said that, I think Acting DDG, you will introduce yourself and you can shoot straight into the presentation. Introduce yourself, and every other member of your team will introduce themselves, because as the actual chair of this committee says, some people come to Parliament and never speak, but the only time that they're given to speak is when they introduce themselves, so they must introduce themselves. I think I should perhaps note the apologies. There's an apology from the Honourable Minister Blade Nzimande, who is unable to attend the portfolio committee as he's having a long-standing commitment of the Department of Science and Innovation on Tuesday and on Wednesday. He will attend the cabinet meeting at Danes. So on Wednesday he'll be attending the cabinet meeting. There is also an apology from the DG, Gwebs Bonde. He's unable to attend the portfolio committee meeting and thus has nominated Dr. Mahlobo, the acting deputy DG for Community Education and Training to lead the departmental delegation. There is an apology from the Honorable Deputy Minister Putima Namela, who will be arriving late to the Portfolio Committee due to a doctor's appointment. I think members would be aware of the fact that the Honorable Deputy Minister has been struggling with an injury. The chairperson, just to make sure there's clarity to all members and guests in the House, is unable to attend due to the fact that they had a meeting that ended very late for the intermediary, Honorable Itzia, what is IPC? Yeah, but it's basic. We used to call them task teams, so the new phrase for it, it's a tongue twister for me. But the meeting ended past midnight, and Chair was unable to make his way to Cape Town on time. so that is why he will not be present this morning. Those are the apologies. I hope members accept them. Yes, no? Apologies accepted. Honorable Jane Mananiso? Are we accepting the apologies? We do. Honorable Itzia? We accept the apologies?
I'm still thinking about it. Yes.
Okay. Thank you, Honorable Itzia. Dr. Mahlobo, the floor is yours.
Thank you, Chair. And good morning, honorable members. My name is Begi Mahlobo. I'm the Acting Deputy Director General for Community Education and Training. Before I proceed, let me give my colleagues an opportunity to introduce themselves.
Good morning, honorable members. My name is Esther Godisang. I am the director responsible for governance and management support in the CET colleges.
Chair and members of the committee, my name is David Diale. I'm the chief director dealing with curriculum.
I have a slight technical glitch. This thing doesn't project on the screen. Thank you. I'm not used to using this type of the machine. I use something completely different. And so I have absolutely no idea, except to move left and right. That's it. But anyway, we can proceed. Chair, let me just start by saying that we are going to make this presentation in three parts. I'll do the background part, and Ms. Godisang will deal with the issues relating to governance and management, and I'll go back to the infrastructure part, and then Mr. Diare will deal with the questions. The first part of the presentation will deal with the background as listed there, institutional landscape, budget allocation, program-based enrollment, budget estimates for CET, and earmarked funding. The second part will deal with governance as listed there. And then the third part will deal with the infrastructure and challenges arising from the infrastructure. Chair and honorable members, I think in 2009 July, when the department was formed through a presidential proclamation, the assignment of what then was called the Adult Basic Education and Training Act was then assigned to the Minister of Higher Education. And together with all other legislations, such as what was then called FET Colleges Act and the Higher Education and Training Act. But it took us between 2009 and 2015 to actually move the functions, all the functions from the provincial competence to the national competence. And at the time when we took over the function, you have on the slide, which is on the board, you had, we formed, or 9 community colleges were formed, and each one in the province. The numbers in terms of notice numbers, those are notice numbers in the Gazette of that year, Government Gazette 3857 of 16-2015. And this was being done in order to prepare so that when they come over to us, they are juristic persons. And also the Act at the time assumed that the 3,276 centers will all be colleges. And we decided it is not possible to make all these centers colleges. At least under each college, we must subsume what we call community learning centers today. At the time, they were called public adult centers. Now, on the screen, you can see that in Limpopo, there were 779. And as you can see, the total adding up to 3,276. And we incorporated them under each community college. And for instance, KZN had 1097, Northern Cape 191, and Free State 204, and the list goes on. And these are the centers under each, these are the centers which were incorporated under each college. Just to respond at this stage to the chairperson, the issue about when you take over this function, what exactly is it supposed to do in the context, against the background of universities and there being TVET colleges? Now, when we took over the function, we took over the function in the context of the white paper on post-school education and training. And therefore, we took them over so that they can serve people who cannot be served by universities, people who, adult and young people who can no longer be served by schools, and therefore also move the function from providing your classic general education. It must offer skills which will enable articulation into TVET colleges. And the Stats SA survey at the time, and I'm not quite sure the extent to which it has changed, the Stats SA survey at the time, this grouping of people numbered about 18 million or so, people who have some primary school education but they can't go to school due to age and other factors, who have completed primary education but they can no longer go back to school, who have some secondary education but they can't go and complete because in some instances of age and in some instances because of their circumstances. And there is a huge number of young people between who leave school between grade 9 and grade 12. And those people can't go to school, and this sector is supposed to serve them in terms of the general general formative education. And then the other dimension of what these institutions are supposed to do is to provide school, to provide, offer skills for people to earn sustainable livelihood. In other words, it is not just general education. Our responsibility is not just general education, is to offer skills, either in part qualifications or full qualification, but such qualification must enable, if you want to proceed, to articulate into TVET program, into TVET programs. And the third dimension of the offerings of a community education and training is to offer those programs which necessarily you don't have to get the certificate, but it's programs which are of value to communities. For instance, HIV education. You don't necessarily go in to get a certificate, but is to be equipped and understand what it means. I guess in these days, once we have enough research around the coronavirus, we may be able then to go into communities to say, this is what this viral problem means, and this is how to deal with them. And in some instances, there are programs which you find in communities where communities form cooperatives, and two ways of dealing with that. It's the community college provides space for the for that cooperative to operate, or you actually get funding in order to train them and in how to manage their own cooperatives. In other words, our mandate is three-dimensional: general academic education, skills, occupational skills, in full or part, and that non-formal education for which we don't necessarily have to get a certificate. And that is what distinguishes us from your TVET colleges and universities. Now, during the tenure of the Honorable Naledi Pandor as the Minister of Higher Education and Training, she actually said, no, this is not sustainable. You can't have one college running 779 centers. Can you do some research and see if you can't narrow down the system without compromising access? And we did that, and we found that in some of the centers, there are really very few students. In some of the centers, given that, we decided, well, let's reduce the number of the centers. We agreed, and the minister approved 200 centers instead of 3,276. On the understanding that the center, the size of the center might be able to vary between 800 students and 1,250 or above. But under each center, you would have community learning centers. And the target was to reduce under each center, you will have satellites, and on the screen, the number of satellites would be 1,610. Honourable members, just to note that the responsibility of the minister in this instance is to establish colleges. But the rationalisation of centres or the opening and closing of centres is the responsibility of councils. In other words, the list which we say there are 200 of them is a list which has been provided to us by college council through a resolution and decisions of council. Similarly, the list which has been provided to us as satellite centres has been rationalized and provided to us through council resolution, so that at the moment we have asked the minister to gazette 200 centers, and the actual number is 1587, because the council said no, some of the numbers allocated to them they can't make. And therefore, I think Mpumalanga and the Eastern Cape gave us lower numbers, and those are the ones which we are going to gazette. Now, when we take the function from the provinces, we take the function, in other words, funding follows the function. Which means the compensation of employees together with the operational budget of centers and colleges is taken from the provinces and is transferred to us. Now, what is presented on this screen, which is slide 9, does not include the budget then, which was meant to fund the staff who were in offices at the time. And the budget presented, it's what is called transfers, that which would be given to centers per province. In terms of the old framework, we kept the budget as it was per province. We didn't change it until recently. I think this year we have changed it, this year, as you will see, how the allocation has changed. Now, as I indicated earlier, In the strategic plans and annual performance plans of colleges, these community colleges, this time we have said the system is not going to move until we prescribe for the system what to do, because many of the colleges are going to stay in the comfort zone of only offering academic programs and ignore the skills and ignore non-formal programs. And so we decided, well, in the context of the NDP, which requires us to have an enrollment of 1 million students by 2030, we do need at least to start this year with a total of 375,000, and then distributed per college in terms of total enrollments. However, we also said, in terms of skills, can we start infusing the skills program at least so that there are 10% of our program offerings. The general academic programs, which means your level 4, mm-hmm. Your level GETC, can we take it to 25, and in fact this is supposed to be grade 12, level 4 of the NQF. Can we keep it at 25, and then your A at level 1 to 4 at 58, and accommodate non-formal programs at 5%. and this is how the APPs and the strategic plans are framed for the year 2020, and the numbers increase until 2024. In terms of our revised budgeting, this is in terms of the new framework, this is how we have revised the initial budgeting for when you look at 2019-20, that was the budget, and when you look at 2020-2021, that is the budget. In other words, these are estimates. These are estimates because we actually literally do not have a budget yet until the minister, Mr. Mowin, then presents the budget and the parliament approves the division of revenue. And these are the estimates based on the previous three-year MTEF period. Now, excuse me. Now, again, something which has not been there before, all we did was to transfer the budget to the colleges so that then they can divide the budget according to the number of their centers. But this time, because we have a particular project in mind, we said, okay, we're going to top slice the budget of all the colleges and give the colleges earmarked funding. For student resourcing, for instance, we said 30%. For pilot centers, there are about 54 of them in which we are piloting the concept of community education and training so that we also have a sense of what are the stumbling blocks and what are the things which we have achieved over the 5 years until 2024. For students with disabilities, we have put aside 20% of the budget of each college. And for students, for colleges that are confronted by long distances and rurality, we have set aside to serve them 10%. For infrastructure maintenance is 10%. And then the total of our earmarked allocation is 31 million. I'm saying this in order to explain two things. When you want to know about assessing governance and management and infrastructure, what is it that is being governed? And what is it that is being managed? And that is why I've talked about the 9 colleges, the 200 centers, the 1587 community learning centers, and the budget that is allocated to them as transfers. And these budgets, please note, they do not include compensation of employees because the compensation is kept by the department. It is the department that actually pay the staff as well as the management of the college. The funding for compensation is not transferred to the college. It becomes a budget for it is part of the budget for compensation of employees in the college. At that point, Chair and Honorable Members, I will ask Mrs. Kodisang to deal with governance and management.
Thank you very much. I was waiting for direction whether I can proceed or not.
Oh, okay.
Yes. Thank you very much. I'm going to be taking the honorable members through the governance and the management in the CET colleges. Now, as part of the transition that happened when the Department of Higher Education and Training took over the function of adult education for it to become community education and training, one of the things that happened was that it was the establishment of a proper governance and management for the sector so that it is able to deliver in terms of its mandate. Now, what has happened is that the department has established councils for the community colleges, and the colleges also have a proper management structure, and it has a proper management structure. And also there is a new layer that came into the picture, a layer of student representative councils, which the colleges, all nine colleges, do have SRCs in place. And also one of the things that happened is that realizing that this is new, there needs to be a dedicated focus in terms of strengthening the governance and the management in the CET colleges so that they understand, you know, the mandate and the CET colleges. So as part of the commitment that was made since the establishment of colleges was that we need to then develop and strengthen governance and management in the CET colleges. And to that effect, in terms of our APPs, if you look at them, we have always had a commitment that we need to do something on an annual basis to strengthen these structures. And over the past 3 years, that's what we have actually done. There's always something that we do towards strengthening governance and management, as well as the SRCs. And in terms of the term of office, the council serve a five-year term. SRCs are elected on an annual basis. And as far as the management is concerned, these are permanent employees of the department. Now, just to give you a picture in terms of the composition of councils in the CET colleges, the councils in the CET colleges are as prescribed in the Continuing Education and Training Act, and they are constituted in the following manner. There's two parts to it. There's ministerial appointees as well as external members, but in total, our councils have got 16 members, as indicated in the CET Act. There are five ministerial appointees. There are appointees. The four there are appointees that are appointed in terms of expertise, and donor, academic board, SRC, staff rep, and in total they come to 16. And in terms of the management, our management is appointed as indicated in the National Policy on Community Colleges, which was gazetted in 2015. In terms of our management, we have a principal, then we have three DPs, who is DP Academic, DP Finance, as well as Corporate Services. And in terms of how they were appointed, the department did advertise this post, and proper HR policies and processes were actually followed. And as I indicated, they are permanent employees who are the management appointed in terms of the Public Service Act. Now, our SRCs, the elections happen, I think, like any other institutions that we have. Elections happen at our colleges, from the community learning centers and so on, but the SRCs are composited, as indicated in the slide. There are 12 members, and those are the portfolios, and all nine CET colleges do have SRCs. Now, in terms of the situational analysis on the governance, as indicated in the previous slide, in terms of their composition, in terms of the situational analysis, is that we must acknowledge that the CET sector is fairly new. As Dr. Mashobo indicated earlier on, the sector only started in 2015. So it's 2020 is what, 5 years now. Now, we had to start somewhere with the sector because it was just not ready to hit the ground and run. So as a department, we had to look at what is it that we had taken over as adult education. And one of the things that was lacking was that the function came from 9 provincial education departments. And it came as adult education at the time. And we realized that it came with different administrative processes. There were no policies in place. There was just nothing to actually guide the sector to go forward. Now, what we did at the time, we thought it would be proper to give the space some shape and form by making sure that there are proper policies in place. So we worked with the management and the councils in the CET colleges to ensure that at least there are some governance policies in place, there are systems that are put in place, there are controls so that we are able to hold people accountable, there's proper guidance in terms of what is expected in the space. So that's what we actually focus on before we can actually look into the deliverable side of things. And the current councils, like I said, the space is new. The current councils are actually the first cohort of councils that the space has since 2015 to date. Okay. Is it low-shady? Okay, thanks. I think that we have copies, so I'll just go on then to talk because there are hard copies that we provided to them. Okay, so, yes, thanks, Chen. So we then, I think Dr. Masao did say he has a slight glitch with this thing, so I'm not sure what happened there. But nonetheless, the councils that we have currently are the first cohort of councils in the CET colleges. They were they started their term of office in September 2015. So you'll then realize that they are actually their term of office is coming to an end in 2015-2020. I mean, in September 2020, they will be finishing their five year term in office. And their term lapses in September. And what we have done in preparation of the incoming council, we have already written to the minister, and the minister has approved the submission for us to advertise call for nomination for the new council members. So we are expecting that in the coming week that advert will be out in terms of the government gazette, also in the newspapers, because obviously before they come into office, we need to do some due diligence in terms of certain processes of putting them in office. But we are expecting that there will not be a lapse. As soon as the current council go out in September, we'll be ready to actually put in the new councils in office. Now, in the next slide, which is slide 17, continuing on the situational analysis, like I said, we with the current councils that we have there, we had to start by putting processes in place. So what has happened is that the current councils that we have actually been functional in terms of how we assess them. And functionality for them, this I'm not only referring to in terms of their composition, because there and there are vacancies that exist due to one reason or the other in different councils. But they have been functional insofar as required by the Act. They are supposed to provide guidance to the colleges by making sure that there are strategic plans in place to the colleges. There are APPs in the colleges, and there's also accountability in terms of giving us the annual reports where they account for performance, for usage of the resources that were actually allocated to the colleges. And the councils that we have performed this function very well. Colleges do have stress plans that guide them in terms of deliverables and all those things. And the other thing that our councils did very well was that, the moving of the function of adult education to higher education was really a period of uncertainty in so many ways, because the phase of the sector had to change, from just being providing basic literacy and so on, but to now begin to deliver on the things on the mandate that Dr. Mahlobo clearly articulated earlier on. Now, the councils were there with us finding the space and managing the transition, you know, very well, so that the colleges, while they find this new phase, but also the management begin to appreciate the role that they must play in terms of delivery of the mandate of CET colleges. And our councils have also, to date, they actually managed to occupy office in a true sense of the word and ensure that the council is functional by making sure that the subcommittees of councils are actually there. And to this effect, the most important was the audit, you know, your audit and risk, the finance, the planning, those subcommittees are actually there. And from time to time, we do get, you know, reports and recommendations from councils that you actually see that they were carefully thought at, and the mitigating strategies that they will put there, you'll see that the subcommittees of councils in the CET colleges are actually functional. The other thing that the council were very instrumental on was that, as indicated earlier on, that we had to do some research in terms of the functionality of our CLCs, to reconfigure the space, to take it from 3,276 centers, as indicated, to 200. And we couldn't do that as a department, but we had to rely on the councils there, because that is the prerogative of councils. And the councils did do their work as well in that regard and took those resolutions that said, in the interest of efficiency in the space, councils took resolution that actually reduced the number of centers, but also looking in the issues of accessibility for communities. So we do have those resolutions from councils that was done. And the councils also, in terms of the Act, the requirement is that on their third year of term of office, their councils are supposed to actually go into a re-election of their chairperson, deputy chair, and all those things. Our council did actually go through that. So in terms of complying to proper governance and so on, also in terms of how they run themselves, you see that the councils are really, you know, doing things in a proper manner. So those things then happen on their third term, like on their third year. Like I said, this is their fifth year. So that process did go on. Now, continue to slide 20. I'll keep mentioning, because we are looking at the hard copies so that we flow together. In terms of the continuing with the situational analysis now on slide 20, the scope of management in the CET colleges goes beyond, you know, making sure that there is teaching and learning happening in the centers. But they have a responsibility to ensure that the integrity of the sector is there. And this is through making sure that the colleges achieve excellent business operations. And in this sense, the management are supposed to make sure that there is proper record. Data is very, very important. So record management, our management is supposed to look into that. HR issues, they are supposed to ensure that the colleges are above board in terms of their human resources. Issues of connectivity, which are still a challenge for the sector, but management is supposed to look into that. Financial management and the supply chain management issues. So the management is their responsibility goes to that level beyond just making sure that centers are teaching and learning. And given the challenges that are there in the sector, from where we sit as a department when you look at it, the management of our colleges is functional insofar as ensuring that there is teaching and learning, which we agree it is the core business of the college. But in terms of the issue that I mentioned before of excellent business operation, that's the area that they are still, you know, warming into, going into that. So, but in terms of the teaching and learning, they are actually making sure that it's actually happening. And one of the issues that probably make them not to be able to currently deliver in as far as the business operations is concerned for the colleges is that they are very limited in terms of capacity. As indicated earlier, the management only is four people. is the principal and the three DPs, and then there will be an admin person or a secretary to the principal and so on. But if they are to deliver on those areas, if you look at them individually, a record management, HR, finances, supply chain, obviously, the people that are there in terms of management, they are very, very limited. Something somewhere is bound to actually suffer in terms of how they can actually deliver. But that's how they are actually structured at the moment. So what then happens is that the college management is still largely dependent on the department. And in this case, we have departmental officials who are in different educational districts. So you find that there is straddling of role, because somewhere this department officials need to play, you know, the role of a player and a referee, because they find themselves having to go into the space of the college just to make sure that they support them for certain functions to actually happen in the college. Moving to slide 21, situational analysis in terms of our SRCs. I must indicate that our SRCs are there in the colleges, but however, this is one area that is still lacking behind. And I guess the college, in terms of when you look at their capacity also in, they find themselves wanting in terms of supporting the SRCs in terms of how for them to occupy their space fully as a student representative council. And we believe that this is one area that we need to develop, because a vocal SRC who understand what they need to do, you know, they have a huge role to play in terms of the quality of provision in the colleges. But currently, the role that the SRCs, their role is defined in the Act, and it's an area that we actually need to support. More so because I think when you look at the students that come in the CET colleges, it's very, very interesting, because when you look at them, the issue of the age difference, you know, it's just something. The background in terms of education, so it's not your typical SRC as you'd find it in any other institution. Because if you have a student who is a student in the CET and this person has never been to school, and they've got every right to be elected to be a member of the SRC. So in terms of how you capacitate them and make them to be functional is very, very, is very, very interesting. And I must say that I think in one of the interventions, like I said, we have interventions that we do with them. We had SRC members who, there was a chairperson of the SRC from KZN, and he was 54. And he was coming to do, you know, your basic literacy, but he is a student. So in terms of how then you deal with the SRC and capacity and make them appreciate what it means to be an institution and, you know, as members of the community, and taking into consideration, you know, the value of knowledge that they have in terms of their life experience and where they are in life. So there are those dynamics in terms of how we must then support the SRCs and in the CET colleges. But it's an area that is really developing and coming. But we do have SRCs. And going to challenges that are confronting the councils and the management in the CET colleges, this is slide 22. Our councils, as indicated, they are functional, I mean, within the limited, you know, scope or the possibilities that are there in terms of the CET colleges. But the challenges that confront them, I think from the department side of things, we don't have challenges with them to say our councils are lacking, we wish they could do or appreciate the space better, because they've made an effort to understand what is CET over the 5 years, and they do engage us strongly in terms of what their expectations are. Now, the challenges that face them are really systemic in nature, and these are challenges confronting both the management as well as the councils in the CET colleges. And for one, there is, you know, the frustration that is there for our management and the councils is the issue of infrastructure. Our sector lacks identity in as far as infrastructure is concerned. And this is a huge problem because it perpetuates, you know, the stigma of ABET. You know, people had an attitude when you are going to an ABET center. And if you look at the students that are coming into our sector, we have, you know, from your 18-year-olds, your 20-year-olds, they are very young people. When you look at our enrollments, the adult cohort has really faded out in a way. We are dealing with very, very young people. Now, the lack of infrastructure, you know, continues this stigma to say you are an avid learner, and there's a way that people view, you know, you as an avid learner. It's like you're a failure in life, something went wrong with you, and so they don't see it as a second opportunity that you are taking, actually. So the issue of infrastructure then is very limiting, because the majority of our centers are operating in schools, in mainstream schools. And for some reason, I don't know why, the mainstream schools that are sort of willing to accommodate us are primary schools mainly. Now, if you think of just the furniture at the primary school, how it looks like, and to take an adult to go learn there, there's nothing encouraging for that person to go there. Because just the chair that they sit on, the environment, it's, you even know, you know, the classrooms in primary schools are targeted toward attention for kids. So the layout already, it doesn't say this is an environment at which an adult can actually show interest in terms of them coming to learn and keep coming back to the space. So we have that challenge in terms of the infrastructure. Dr. Matov will go into it later, but I thought I should highlight that, you know, the stigma that comes with it in terms of infrastructure, it's actually it's a frustration. Because for management also and for the council to say we are providing oversight into the, it just limits them in a particular way. And just operating in schools obviously limits the innovation that must come with community colleges, because you can only do so much. You don't own that space. And therefore, the instability that will come with it, it's just there. So this is a major challenge that is confronting us in terms of CET colleges. And the other issues really, in terms of filling of vacancies, our councils have really, really been confronting us on this one to say, you know, they from time to time, the functionality of council might be affected by the vacancies that actually exist there. And because for the department, then we are responsible for the ministerial appointees, but for the other appointees, the councils must then, you know, the colleges must advertise on their own. And given the limited budget that they have, you'll find that carrying the cost of advertising, you know, putting out a gazette is not easy. Putting adverts in a newspaper is actually very, very expensive. So you'll find that they are unable, they are competing priorities for colleges, and in terms of their budget, then they are unable also to do the filling of posts on their own. And the challenge that we have faced sometimes, and I think at times, due to the frustration of in the limitations of capacity, you know, you'll find that council feels that the colleges are moving slow in terms of implementing certain things. And you'll find that from time to time, there's this thing, a challenge of crossing lines to say, you know, they want to become operational at times. But these are the things that we have managed to manage and give guidance where necessary. I did talk to the issue of limited capacity in terms of the management at the colleges, and it really impacts negatively in terms of them delivering on the mandate that the colleges actually have. And continuing with the challenges that confront councils and so on, I think we have done so much work as a department to ensure that the colleges, you know, are functional. And one of the things, like I indicated in the first slide, was making sure that our colleges have got systems in place. It was very, very important. Because when we took over the colleges, one of the things that the department kept due to capacity and lack of system was that the department kept the budget of the colleges, and they depended on the department to actually run their supply chain and a whole lot of things. So the department then had a project which was done with SAICA, which put systems in place for colleges so that they are able to receive their budget and run with it as institutions and be independent. And I think since 2015, the last year, the current financial year, which is coming to an end in March, this is the first year that colleges actually receive their budgets on their own to run with them, because we have put systems in place. Now, the one side of it was that with this project, there are people who are appointed on a contract basis who assisted the colleges to function and so on. Now, the project is coming to an end in February. And if you look at the HR capacity of the college, the issue of the people who are leaving transferring skills to the college so that upon departure, you know, those systems, then there's maintenance in terms of functionality, there's a problem there. So there's that challenge in terms of what's going to actually happen to the colleges. And this relates to putting down, you know, proper financial management system and some administrative processes that have been put to the colleges, and the skills need to be transferred so that colleges can continue to run on their own. So that is a challenge confronting management, and councils have been very vocal to say to the department what's going to happen here when the project ends. The other challenge that is confronting the colleges is the profile of the lecturers that we have in the CET system. Now, the lecturers that are there are lecturers that came with the adult basic education when the function moved into the department. And these were lecturers that mainly taught, you know, your literacy. Now, the mandate of the sector has changed in terms of what needs to be provided. So the lecturers then, therefore, are struggling to contend with the new demand, the expectation that is there for them to make sure that the sector delivers that supposed to be, because there are lecturers who were teaching just your basic literacy in terms of ABET and so on. So there is then that challenge in terms of developing them and reskilling them to actually be, because they can be now chased to say they are no longer wanted in the sector, in terms of reskilling them and making sure that they are able to deliver what CET needs to actually deliver. The limited budget issue continues to be a problem, because in terms of how, if you paid attention in terms of what was indicated earlier, you will realize that the budget in the CET sector is very, very limited. I think of the PSET, we are really the least funded. And the challenge also is that the budget that was there, it came as is from province in terms of allocations. It never changed to now begin to appreciate the new mandate. So it was enough maybe to just offer basic literacy and so on. But now for the sector to be able to begin to accommodate these other provisions that must be there, the budget doesn't match that which is required for the sector to actually deliver on. And as a result, as an effect to that, the negative effect is that then the sector is unable to actually, there is attempt to diversify in terms of programs to make it more attractive and be responsive. But given the budget that is there, then it is a challenge in terms of really diversifying programs and being innovative in terms of what we need to do. And the issue of conditions of service of lecturers, which is a thorn for us as a sector. Our lecturers, like I said, we took them as they were from provinces, and each and every province paid them in a different manner the way they determined like that. Now, to date, our lecturers are still in the same boat in terms of working for the same sector, doing the same thing, but a lecturer in Limpopo and a lecturer in Gauteng, Eastern Cape, are paid differently, and which is something that is really, really bringing so much instability into the sector, and the management of colleges is confronted with it, because they are the first phase, you know, where lecturers will go and confront to say what is happening with our conditions of service, what is the department saying, and it brings instability. And naturally so, I mean, for people when they are frustrated, you'll find that every time when we are nearing exams, you know, as part of threatening for exams, this is when these issues are always brought forward to say we will not sit for exams or we will not monitor and so on because of our conditions of service. And we also, as a sector, and this is something that the management has brought to us, confronted with the issue of outstanding certificates for the GETC, which is our qualification that is offered at CET colleges, which is at NQF, a qualification equivalent to NQF level 1. It's a national examination, which the department is responsible for. So there are also issues of outstanding certificates that are there. Functionality of SRC, I think I did talk to it earlier on when I spoke to its composition. Moving to slide 24, which is now talking to mitigation strategies. The filling of council is something that we are active, filling of the vacancies of council, something that we are actively working on. And like I said, the main challenge there is really around budgets and so on. So we have from time to time tried to reprioritize in terms of our budgets to make sure that we don't render councils, you know, dysfunctional. So we will try then to make sure that we fill those vacancies and reprioritize. And colleges also, we have seen them, you know, advertising and submitting to the minister for concurrence of members for councils as required by the CET Act. And the issue of roles and responsibilities, I did say that the frustration that comes with the limited structure of management, you'll find that there's a blurring of roles. So we have then, as a department, convened sessions to support our councils and management, and we also use very much our legal services in the department to actually deal with this issue when it happens and so on. And consciously, as a branch, we also make sure that we deal with those issues when they happen. The issue of limited staff in the colleges, what has happened is that there is a process that is happening in terms of putting down a proper organogram for the colleges, an organogram that is supported by or informed by the functions of the colleges, the different offices that might exist there, the core business, you know, of the college, how the college should achieve its business excellence. So the organogram is informed by these functions that the colleges, that we expect the CET colleges to actually perform. So that process is at an advanced stage, I know, and the management of the colleges that have participated in this process. So it's something that is done and headed by our corporate services branch in the department. But as a branch, we obviously participate because we are interested in the process. And in the next slide, which continues on the mitigating strategies, the issue of lecturer development. We are approaching it in a manner that we want to actually do it in the right way. And we start by saying we need to have a skills audit for our lecturers that are actually there. The cohort that we have, we start by having a skills audit with them so that we are able to put interventions based on an empirical evidence that we get from that. So, but the plan there is that our lecturers need to be reskilled so that they are able to deliver in terms of the mandate of the CET, because when you look at the students that come now into our centers, into our colleges, the number that comes there for basic literacy is a very, very small number. Because when you look at them that are registered for what we call your IELTS level 1, which is the basic literacy, the numbers are very small. But the bigger number is numbers that actually need skills, that needs your NQF level 1 and higher than that. So we need to then make sure that the lecturing component is able to actually respond to the needs of the sector. And for that, we are really looking for funding from the CETAS. And I know that we have been working very well with the ETTP CETA in this instance, because it has started to actually make some funding available towards training of lecturers in particular skills. So we are on that. And in terms of the program diversification, there are many factors that are actually limiting us in this instance. There's an issue of infrastructure that I said earlier on, because we can't innovate in schools. It's very, very difficult to begin to introduce new things working in the school's environment. Now, what has happened is that there is a process that the department has embarked on of piloting in the CET colleges. And realizing that we can't go full scale for all centers, each and every college has identified a number of centers where we can actually pilot the real concept of CET colleges in terms of program diversification in those centers. And what we have done is that in total there are 54 community learning centers, that is across the country, across the 9 colleges that have been identified, which will then pilot the concept of community colleges, and especially the issue of program diversification, to say they must, in those centers, we expect to find that they are beginning to introduce programs that are responsive to communities, be it programs that do not need, you know, a qualification and so on. They need to be able to do their part qualifications, full qualifications, and so on. So they need to be able to move in that space. And from the lessons learned, we'll then be able to move into other centers going forward. And in this case, the 54 have actually started. And as a department, we are in possession of the plans to say in each center, what is it that they're actually going to do, and we are constantly monitoring those centers. And the issue of conditions of services is an issue that is also receiving attention. This is where I spoke about the lecturers having, you know, different conditions of service from different colleges, and is an issue which is also lies within the competency of our corporate service branch because it's HR related. But it's something that they are attending to, and there are currently engagements that are happening with labor, because if you change conditions, labor must have agreed. So there are those processes that are happening with labor. And the issue of the outstanding certificates, members, it's also an issue that is attended to through Program 4. Because in the department, the issue of certificates and so on is something that is managed and coordinated from Program 4, which is PIVET colleges. But the competence of certification then is also there. So it's managed. There are processes that they have put in place to manage that. And in terms of the functionality of the SRCs, given that the different nature of the student that participates in our SRCs, SRCs are there, yes, complying with the Act, but we thought we really need to put down a guiding document that guides how colleges should support our SRCs and capacitate an SRC for particularly SCET colleges. So SCET college, then we have a framework that we have provided to colleges. But on our side, it's something that we are really going to be going out and advocating and really supporting and bringing our SRCs to be functional in terms of how we envision them to be for a CET college. Yeah, I think that's how far my presentation goes. Thanks.
Chair and honorable members, just turning to infrastructure, I will be brief. The issues that we thought we should talk about within the umbrella term, which is infrastructure, is teaching and learning infrastructure and administration space, and bulk municipal services and others, and issues relating to security and other facilities. The challenges arising from infrastructure, Ms. Kodisang has just said. You see, if you take a public institution and you look for an office in Pick and Pay, because that's where you happen to be able to rent, then the institution lacks identity. You don't know where the college is. And most of our colleges, Gauteng City College is in Omonde, in the complex there. And similarly, Mpumalanga City College is sharing space with a Tibet college in Kangala. And Limpopo is somewhere in the suburb. The fact that we do not have dedicated infrastructure for these institutions is basically making the situation worse in terms of institutional identity. Now, the time on task for lecturers and students. In many instances, you have to wait until the school time ends, and then you go in for 2 hours. For a curriculum, which is a certificate, we need a number of hours per year. And then if you have limited time on task, it's a miracle that some of our students are able to complete the subject within a year or within a limited time, because there's just no time. The CET system, poor education and training development outcomes, that's what I'm just talking about. You have no infrastructure, you have limited time on task, and then what follows is the bulk of the students fail. Or, as she said, if I'm coming to register at your college and I realize that the furniture that you are giving me, or even the room, is for kids, and it's a no-show next time. I've been saying this in the department that, the expectations are huge for the sector, but there's no investment in it. And if you are changing a system, in the department between 2007 and 2015, I was managing TVET colleges. To change the curriculum of TVET colleges in 2006, government allocated 1.9 billion in order to enable the innovation that was required then. There is no funding set aside for this program so that it moves truly from being an ABET program into an innovation, general education, skills, and informal program. There is, in other words, it is in the heart of the department that this program should do this, but there is no investment in it. In fact, of the department's budget, our budget is somewhere around 2% of the budget of the department. And the greater part of it goes to compensation of employees, which is about 92% of this program goes to compensation of employees, and 8% is meant to deliver quality education and training. It's just not possible. And therefore, it is difficult to see when you diversify a program. Let me give you an example of skills. For a skills program, first, you must have a workshop where you are actually going to teach practicals. You can't change a school, it is not yours. You can't change the school and create a workshop in it. And there is also a compromise in the quality and integrity of examination and assessment. And the SAICA project invested hardware in terms of computers and software. And the criminals came and cleaned the college because of weaknesses in security. Because at least SAICA had insured the computers, they're going to replace them. But one thing which has got to, each center has got to have a security facility. In schools, once the school is out, that's it. The security guards go as well, because they lock the gate, or they hand the keys for the gate over to the center manager. Please run. Once you are done, please lock. Now, it also, to offer a skill, let me give you an example in plumbing. You require accreditation. Accreditation you can only get if you have qualified lecturers and qualified facilities and qualified material. And if you do not have these, you can't be accredited. And as a result, our fear is that if the sector is likely to operate on service providers who would be accredited in terms of provision and capacity. Now, how are we managing currently? We manage on lease rental accommodation. And some of the colleges have their own centers, like I think Gauteng has about 26 centers, which are the centers of the college. And the difference thereof are basically schools. And a greater number of the centers we use are basically property of the provincial education departments, and so on and so forth. When you look at the next slide, you will see that most of the centers, about 482 of our centers, are basically schools. And very few centers are owned by colleges. As I indicated, it's either you have a relationship with a municipality or a provincial public works or the national public works or with a university, you use their infrastructure, or you use the infrastructure of the faith-based organization, one faith-based organization whose infrastructure is called the Catholic Institute of Education. They have facilities, in fact, around the country. But simply put, most of our infrastructure are schools, and then the expectation is please deliver skills in schools. At the moment, we have a directorate in the branch, which if you have your own infrastructure, you must be trained on how to maintain it. At the moment, what we have also done is to do the GPS locations of the 54 centers. And we are, at the same time, as we proceed to get more and more of these centers being owned by colleges, trying to develop a special infrastructure information management system. Members, one of the problems we encounter, the province, because of low enrollment, gives you a school, please make use of the schools. And as soon as the enrollment in the province increases, they want their school back. And now, I've been saying to councils in particular, please enter into a formal agreement so that they can't chase you anytime. If they chase you, they must find yourself space where you are going to go, because this random evictions is not good for education of young people and adults. We are also exploring, we are looking for underutilized or unutilized buildings so that we can renovate and then move the centers out of the schools into the so-called unutilized or underutilized building. That we have visited about 10, 11 skills centers. Here in the Western Cape, we went to one in Fredendal and the other one in Bredasdorp, with a view of making use of those skills centers for provision of community education and training. And the NSF DHCT project is actually building ICT infrastructure in CET colleges to create connectivity capability in the 9 CET colleges and 54 centers. And we are going to use the Sandrand backbone and so that all our colleges, starting with the main colleges and 54 centers, are connected. Each year, until very recently, we've been submitting bids to Treasury for funding just for your ordinary skills development and teaching and learning, as well as infrastructure. But of late, you no longer submit, for the past 3 years, you no longer submit bids to National Treasury. They just tell you there's no money. So it becomes useless even to prepare one. Because if you have been told beforehand, don't even submit a request because the government doesn't have money, and then we don't submit. But it's a matter we have to keep taking up with the minister, that if this sector is to deliver that which it's supposed to do, it requires additional funding. Chair and members, thank you very much.
Thank you very much for the presentation. I hope the information given will be sufficient for members to engage, but what is not there, I think members will say, is not there, and hopefully you will provide clarity on that. I think I would like to start so that when members are done engaging, it becomes clear what members have said and what I'm summarizing on. During the January period, I was able to do or have an interaction with the CET College in Soweto. And there was a lot of frustration relating to some of the issues that you've already raised, with regards to infrastructure, with regards to financial support. But also, I think you're correct in saying there isn't, the sector currently doesn't have an identity. Not going beyond issues around infrastructure. Generally, we haven't created a culture, an institutional culture within the CET sector. And that is something that can't rely solely on the department. It's something that, as a community, as a society, as South Africans, we need to assist the department in achieving. The principal at the college that I went to narrated a challenge of having to deal with multiple sort of, not enrollments, but a situation where you have a child who is sent from a high school, and umntwana uyafaila on multiple occasions, and the teachers from that high school are basically saying, no, go to the CET College. They'll be able to cater for your needs. So one, that child could be struggling academically because the teachers at that high school are failing to actually teach using a method that works on the learner. But also, we are conflating issues of completing one's studies with one requiring special needs to complete their studies. So we're turning CET colleges into special needs schools that fall within basic education, and that's highly problematic. Children who are said to, you know, how recklessly society may say, yeah, I'll phone up for under. So go to a CET college. There are those that are repeating their matric. I'm not certain if that is what when I engaged the educators there, they sounded as though that wasn't necessarily the role of CET colleges to repeat one's matric, was not necessarily the role of the CET college, and maybe you can clarify that. There were matters relating to, and then of course, one is coming to repeat or upgrade their marks or whatever it may be, and then of course, then there were those who never finished school and they were now coming there. There is issues around assessment of the person that is coming in. How essentially there are people who can arrive at a CET college with no tracking of past schooling, right? So, umuntu ufika ngana report ngana lutho, and you need to sort of put them somewhere, you need to place them somewhere, and that makes it very challenging for the educators to do that. So then they speak about some of the things they would like to do at the school, and they basically speak to the fact that there's land that they want to buy and use it for workshops where they can focus on building skills. And that is when I begin to get confused, because then I ask myself, so what is the role of TVET colleges vis-a-vis CET colleges? And how do we not find ourselves as a government, as a department, duplicating learning at different levels? You know, how do we make it more clear as to what we are trying to achieve where? It's quite clear what we're supposed to be achieving in basic education, you know. But then when it comes to the role between basic education and then you have the CETs, TVETs, and universities, it just becomes a bit confusing as to what we're trying to achieve where. And I think that is part and parcel of our challenge of identifying a culture, an institutional culture and an institutional mandate when it comes to CETs. And those are things that we need to, as I've said, as a collective, it requires a social compact, as the president would say. It's not something that you alone, perhaps I think we've already requested a colloquium from the chair on purely, strictly speaking to CETs, and also purely, strictly speaking to the curriculum being put forth at CETs, not only the infrastructural issues, because those are issues that we can get through, but why do we want to have a separate building? You know, before we build, what do we want to achieve ideologically through having CETs in existence? So I think that for me, when I engaged with that CET college, that was something that stood out a lot. And again, you see the same culture at CETs where it almost feels like you're in high school, right? So TVETs and CETs have this culture where people are not looked at as adults but as kids. There's a very paternalistic culture that sort of prevails in that space. And for me, CETs are definitely spaces where there's also a level of, you know, when I went there and the learners or students who were there were, the students who were there were rowdy. I said to them, but I can't ask you to shush. I really can't ask you to keep quiet when I speak, because you're adults. You know, it's not a space where, it's like at university, it's not a space where you should be still dealing with such societal value systems that are broken down. So I don't know if we've been able to create that environment within CETs where people see themselves as adults. And when you talk about the fact that some CET lessons take place in a primary school with the aesthetics that are present within the primary school classroom, it is problematic in terms of the what you're doing to the mind, you know, when the person is in the space, and the role of the environment in how one thinks of the space, that thinks of themselves within the space that they find themselves in, you know. So there's a lot of psychology that goes into it as well. So those are definitely things that I picked up. I chose to speak a lot more on my experience at a particular place, because sometimes we get boggled up in the reports and we don't bring forth the issues that are arising as we interact with members of society. So having said that, I hope members understand why I wanted to speak first, so that, you know, when I summarize, it's very clear what members have said vis-a-vis what I have said, because I find it very challenging to say your views just before you're about to summarize, because it becomes conflated to what you're saying and what the House is saying. So I will then take note hands of members that seek to engage the report. I will start from the Honourable Boshoff, Honourable Mananiso, Honourable Sibiya, Honourable Notata, and then end with Honourable Mr. Thank you.